It's a new year.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, Bonk. Happy New Year to everyone listening. Bonk, I just noticed something as we were getting started here that made me laugh silently. At the beginning, now that we can actually hear the theme song and we have to wait for it to kind of do this fade out, this nice fade out you're hearing right now, you just go into this mode where you're just like staring at the wall and just like, what's going on in the Bonk brain during that time?
I don't want to talk about it.
You don't? Is it just dark, awful? It's like an Event Horizon scene
it's
in there?
It's more like you just wouldn't understand.
Okay. All right. Well, if you ever need to talk about it, I'm here. It's weird. I was back home in Kansas for the holidays recently, and you might know my mom's fella. His name is Gary, and he's
so modest. He's very restrained.
And yeah, very. He's
soft spoken.
Soft spoken is the key thing, I would say. No, Gary is a guy you'll hear from counties away, especially whenever football's happening. He is constantly screaming. Very, very, like, you didn't know voices got that loud.
He's really loud. But you know what? Back in the olden days, he would have been a really good, like, town harker or whatever.
Certainly. Certainly, yes.
Like, wakes the town up and gives the masses their daily news.
Yeah. So this is why it was weird, because
the king is coming to visit us!
He would be very, very good at that. Yeah, especially after a few drinks. but so that's what I'm very used to from him. And so it was very odd when my dad and I were going to my mom's house or something. I'd like pick something up at some point. And we walk in, and all we saw was Gary was standing there. Like, we just saw the profile. We saw like his right side, and he was like looking at a fixed position, like slightly above eye line. Didn't acknowledge us walking in the house at all.
And it was just like in the front door,
like through the garage.
Okay.
And so we just saw his profile. No verbal acknowledgement. Didn't move at all. Is just staring straight up with his eyes open. No facial expression. No emotion whatsoever.
What?
And we're just already just kind of weirded out. Like, what's going on here? And like, Dad walked up at some point and was like, "Hey there, Gary." And he didn't respond at all.
It was
very. I mean, this is a while where it's just like he was just in a fixed position.
Was he looking at anything?
We did once we got to a different perspective. We saw he was looking into a room that had a TV mounted on the wall, and a Chiefs game was happening. So he was, but I mean, like, I have seen him at bars and stuff. We're like, "Oh, you're going on a tight end's got to do the ball. What are you doing, you dipshit?" You know, like, he is like extremely loud, and so to see him so somberly, silently watching football was jarring, I would say.
Yeah, I bet, you know, most of the day he's probably quieter and does, like, really, like, gentle things, like knitting or whatever. And
yeah,
then,
sure.
And then it's at night when it all comes out, and it comes out with a bang.
Oh, yeah, yeah, then it's party time, so.
he's the life of the party, that guy.
Oh, yeah. So, how's your year going so far?
So far, it's going great. We're one day in, and I managed to survive, so.
You did.
I got 363 left to go, right?
Well, there's 365, so which two are you discounting?
Today and the previous day, because today is January 2nd.
Okay, yes, for those listening on Sunday, then yes, where we are a day and a half. Well, it depends on when you listen on Sunday. I can't imagine that, I don't know, do you listen to podcasts when they first go up?
Yes.
When they first go up? Because a lot of them drop at like 3
well,
in the morning.
Not like, but I listen to the day they go up.
Okay.
I think a lot of them.
I think that's what I do. I think it's like, oh, it's Wednesday. I'll listen to my podcast today.
My one podcast, yes.
So, yeah. But most of the time, like, you don't have any, like, do you have any that you know you're kind of scraping the bottom, or you've gone through a lot that week because, like, oh, I guess I'm listening to this one. I've got a billion of these built up because you don't get to them typically.
Yeah, there's definitely some like that. There's like The Moth, for example. I love The Moth, but it's not like it's not something that's like on my list of priorities to listen to with podcasts. So a lot of times if I'm at the part in the week where there's a lull between my main podcasts, then I'll use that to like get through some Moth episodes.
That's super evergreen, right? From what you've told me about that show.
Totally. You can go back to the earliest episode that's up on the archive, and yeah, they're totally evergreen. They a lot of times they'll include stories like recordings from like 10 or like 15 years ago sometimes.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I have always liked the idea of evergreen podcasts, because otherwise it's like it can be easy to think that, like, if you're doing a week-to-week thing that's covering current topics and stuff like that, and I've worked on plenty of podcasts that are like that, It feels ephemeral. Ephemeral means surface level, right? Skin deep. That's not what I mean. I mean, what's the word for like
they just like fleeting? Like I think ephemeral is right.
Is that maybe I'm saying that right? Maybe ephemeral is the word I'm looking for, where it's just like, yeah, it exists for a moment there, and it might be very relevant in that moment, but you can't really go back and listen to it. But then I've been proven wrong too, because I'm always trying to pay attention to what podcast audiences want, and it seems like a lot of people, even like the Bombcast and stuff, when I was on that. Mm-hmm. They would go back, like, I'll get tweets like, I'm going through this Bombcast from 2014. It's like, really? You're listening to, like, us wonder, like, what, you know, the God of War reboot just got announced? Like, you know, like...
Yeah, it's interesting to think about that, because it's, like, not only are our podcasts that are, like, especially gaming podcasts, which are, you know, the type of gaming podcast that's a lot about news or, like, what you are currently playing or whatever, like... That there's also a lot of that that's like, if you're talking about news, a lot of like predictions, you know what I mean? A lot of your discussions are around what you think is going to happen, what this means, whatever. So if it's proven to be false, whatever you're talking about later on, and then you go back and listen to it, it's just like, oh, this is a giant like net zero.
You know what I mean? It can almost be frustrating because like you have this, this future site that the hosts don't have at the time. And so like, you know, I'll be listening to my one podcast and they'll be like, oh man. So yeah, this match just got booked. It's going to be awesome. And like, you'll know, they're like, well, either that match didn't happen or that match was disappointing. And it's like, it's weird hearing them like get hyped up about something while you feel like, you know, you're on the other side of this glass thing. It's like, no, don't get excited. Or do get excited. This is actually going to be really good, you know?
Yeah, I think the exception is like when they're those the podcasts like that aren't evergreen, when it's around something where like a big news event happened, like something really newsworthy, you may want to go back and like what were their reactions to it or whatever.
Yeah,
like for example, I remember, and this is kind of an extreme example, but I went back and I listened to the Howard Stern broadcast on 9/11.
Sure, yeah.
When like it was, because it was happening, they were in New York and it was happening like live while they were recording. That's, so they're just trying to figure out on air what's going on. Yeah. If anyone hasn't listened to that, I highly recommend it. It's a really interesting little piece of history. But yeah, I usually like, I feel like save for the gaming podcasts I listen to, all of my podcasts are pretty evergreen. It's just the gaming ones, because those are the ones that that's the subject that I want the most news about.
Sure, sure.
So yeah, that doesn't lend itself to like being revisited many, many, many months or years later.
I guess if the entertainment value is high enough, like my one podcast, like I do just find them very funny. And so like if I run out of those, I do find myself like going back to like 2014, 2015, listening to the episodes. Mm-hmm. So I guess I do get it, with my podcast at least.
Yeah. It's so cool when you find a podcast that you like a new podcast and they've been around for a few years and then it's just like, holy shit, I have this entire backlog, and you know that it's like totally evergreen stuff.
And a lot of times like lore or like hosts that aren't there anymore and things like that. And it's like, oh man, I got to catch up on so much stuff here.
And then you take the deep dive and then that just makes you love the podcast like in an expedited way, because you're just like totally steeped in the personalities and the stories and everything.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
That happened with me with My Favorite Murder and Criminal and Darknet Diaries, a lot of crime related stuff. Because obviously crimes are, you know, eternal.
The evergreen. The most evergreen topic, crime. Yeah. Yeah, well, we do a podcast here that...
We do?
That's what the microphones are. Yeah. Oh, I think you just noticed it for the first time. Yeah, yeah. No, I'm putting these out there. Mm. Yeah. Would you say... I'd say ours are... I think we are a good mix of evergreen in terms of we're watching movies, and you can watch movies at any time. Mm-hmm. And also, we try to stay on top of newer releases, right?
Yeah. Such as
The Matrix Resurrections. We got there smooth as silk. No one can tell you differently. Check the tape. Yes, folks, you know that for a month we've been building up to this, and all the hype and expectation and preparation, how could it not deliver for the return, the glorious return of the Matrix series? Yes, we covered Matrix 1, well, we'll just Matrix Reloaded and Matrix Revolutions before we did the Panty Awards. And now here we are as promised.
It's like really, really long foreplay that results in both parties being unable to climax.
Yeah, we both fell asleep because we were too tired to finish in the sack there. Yeah, that's a really good metaphor. I like that. Yeah, we were just... We're just edging for a while with the Matrix trilogy, and then we just fell asleep.
It's going to be so worth it.
Yeah, yeah. And then it's just like, oh, man, I'm just tired. I don't
know. You know what? I'd actually rather just take a nice nap.
Yeah, which is, it's crazy that we say that, because and you can back me up here, we've watched hundreds and hundreds of movies together.
I'll back you right up.
And there we go. And Have you ever seen me fall asleep during a movie?
No.
No.
I mean, I think maybe, but not one that we've watched for Painting the Stream.
Or even period, have you?
Usually I'm the sleeper.
Oh, you definitely are. You 100% are.
And I get so mad when you want to stop the movie. I hate that.
Oh, but your eyes are closed. And it's like you're going to be missing key which we are talking about Matrix Resurrections because you definitely were falling asleep throughout chunks of this.
It was making me fall asleep.
And that's where I was going with that is that I never fall asleep during movies, but my God, if that like middle hour-ish section there, I probably nodded off a couple times.
Yeah.
Let's just get to the fat here. This sucks.
Oh, it's not good.
It fucking sucks.
It's like, real bad.
I feel like we just watched Matrix Reloaded and Revolutions and we're like, all right, these aren't good movies to watch, but these were ambitious and they were going for some things.
They put a period on that story.
Yeah, it is. You know, you can debate how well the story was told and things like that or how it compares to the first one, but it is it's actually a coherent story, which is the thing I didn't think when they first came out. Mm-hmm. But now I actually feel like I appreciate it for what they were. They're still not good to watch, but they're telling a story. This felt incoherent and boring. Like, I think the thing you could say about the 2 and 3, even if you didn't understand them, which I didn't at first, is that there was visually some incredible stuff going on. The action scenes were stylish and amazing, everything. This doesn't even have good action in it.
Well, and it's funny because it doesn't have really impressive action scenes, and yet it's so heavy-handed with the callbacks, but it's not calling back, like, the one thing that everyone can, like, resoundingly get behind, which was the really kick-ass action from the original ones.
Which, this movie is trying to be so meta and everything. Like, that is... The part I enjoyed the most of this movie is that first like half hour when it was being really meta mm-hmm. and kind of talking about like the studio pressure on the Wachowskis to make another Matrix and them not really wanting to and things like that. And I've even seen some arguments online that this was like intentionally the action was supposed to be bad because they think they know like what audiences expect from the Matrix is the action. And like those game designers at the beginning of the movie being like bullet time and like doing the like bullet dodge thing and guns, lots of guns. And it is, but that is the stuff that people. Well,
and the thing is, it's not like this movie didn't have action. It's not like it wasn't an action movie. If the intention was to subvert our expectations, wouldn't it just not have a lot of action in it at all? But no, there was a considerable amount. It was just kind of boring.
And I think I would prefer it if it was like that first half hour is Neo and as an older Keanu Reeves living in, like, he's not in a machine world. He's in a world that resembles our own in, like, San Francisco. But he's in, like, a Matrix as a game designer. And mm-hmm. basically the original Matrix trilogy are games in this universe and things like that. And that first half hour was really interesting to me of just, like, seeing, like, I would have been fine with 2.5 hours of this being, like, a deconstruction of sequels and studios being, you know, only wanting to green light established franchises and not being willing to spend on, like, bold new ideas and stuff like that. There was some hilarious stuff, like Christina Ricci's, you know, in this briefly, mm-hmm. when she's like, yeah, the two buzzwords we want are originality and fresh. And it's like, I have worked with, like, marketing people that do not know what the fuck they're talking about before. And I was all in on this. I remember at one point, like we paused to go get a drink or go to the bathroom or something. And at that point, maybe 25 minutes in, I was like, I'm into this. Yeah. This is weird. And I would have been all about it subverting expectations. Like I didn't need this to be the Matrix 1. I didn't expect it to be. Right. How could it be? So if they just went totally wild with it in this direction for the whole runtime, sign me up. Mm-hmm. But then you're right. They do try to go to like subpar action scenes. And then they do like, remember how the Zion stuff was so boring in 2 and 3? Great. What if there was EO, another one? And then we have a long ass scene with a terribly prostheticed up Jada Pinkett Smith.
She can't move her face at all. She can just, the reason her voice sounds like that is not because she's an old lady. It's because she can't move her mouth or face at all. I think the biggest problem with the movie for me was that it is ultimately about Neo and Trinity. Mm-hmm. And I never thought that their romance was believable. They had zero chemistry.
It was so wooden. I like both of these actors, but like the writing, it's just none of it felt like an actual human interaction.
Yeah. I mean, I haven't really seen Carrie Ann Moss in anything,
I guess that's right.
But Matrix. And, you know, it's not her fault that the dialogue is so terrible in those movies. But it was just, I never bought their chemistry and that notion that unlike any other person in the Matrix, their being together creates this ridiculous energy, which is why they're in these special pods, which is why their aging has been, you know, slowed down.
Right. And also, isn't that the most, like, the laziest? Because when they announced Matrix 4, one of my first thoughts was like, wait, didn't Neo and Trinity die at the end of 3? Like, mm-hmm. why are they alive? And it's just the most boring, like, oh, the machines rebuilt them because they're, like, super batteries. It's like, fucking what? That's the best you could do? Like, get weirder with it. This is the Matrix. Like, not just they have a lot of extra power juice, you know?
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Yeah, it was, you know, and I think, too, like, just the fact that we had to reuse, or they had to use these characters, like Neo and Trinity, which I totally get why, because they need to have, you know, factors that are recognizable for people. Sure. But they're also so, you know, hamstrung by that as well, because you have to tell a story that revolves around that, even though their story was kind of concluded in the first trilogy, you know? And now it's just, like, stretching it at anything you possibly can to make this work. And, like, I did not at all buy Neil Patrick Harris's, like, analyst character. Like, he wasn't impressive or intimidating or, like, awe-inspiring. He just kind of came off as this kind of, like, you know, know-it-all tech bro, like, little weasel, you know?
Yeah, that's kind of his wheelhouse, is that type of character. And, like, as much as I didn't like the architect scene in Reloaded, the one, the big long talk with the architect, there was, I don't know who that actor is, but there was a certain, like, mythical, machine-like quality to him and the way he talked that I think did lend some gravitas to that scene, as much as I didn't like how overly wordy it was and everything.
Yeah.
But this was, like, I just saw Neil Patrick Harris just being smarmy Matrix designer guy, you know?
Yeah, and there was the new Smith, which was
just why is he Smith? I didn't understand that at all.
I didn't understand it either. I haven't even been able to find any good explanation on the internet as to why Smith was even there in the first place. If he was a rogue program that Neo sacrificed himself to destroy at the end of Revolutions, then why wasn't he just deleted? Why was he reincorporated into the new Matrix? Because it is a new Matrix.
Right. Like, the analyst created this new Matrix. And the analyst is a machine, right? He is like the architect.
Yeah.
He's a program. I did read a one sentence thing about how, like, oh, well, you know, the balance between Neo and Smith is what, like, lets this thing work or whatever, ?
Stupid.
Like, so I guess he was implanted back in
but
there.
That's just, you really, like, that's so much of this movie is just things that people say and you just have to accept, like, oh, okay, that's fine. Okay, their bodies make more energy than the average person.
Sure.
All right. They can see their true digital selves, but to the rest of the world, they look different. All right, I'll take it.
Sure.
You just have to accept everything that's being, because if you don't and you are confused or hung up by anything, as any reasonable person would be, you just end up stumbling down and it's impossible to catch up because all of this movie is just dialogue. It's just so brimming with exposition all the time, because that's the only way you could tell a story like this, which is so intricate and needlessly complicated, is through dialogue.
That's the thing. Like, look at what the first movie did so well, where it's like it is introducing pretty high concept ideas and stuff that certainly a lot of people weren't even ready for in like 1999, but it does it economically and in a way you can understand. You don't have to have read all these like French philosophy books or anything like that. You can understand the prospect of like, oh, it's like they're in a simulation, blah, blah, blah. And like those scenes with Morpheus explaining that stuff to Neo, you are kind of seeing through Neo's eyes and it's like, whoa, this is crazy. This is, you know, but it's understandable and it's not bogged down. I feel like it does this economically. Mm-hmm. Where this, I just felt like they're talking 10 times more, explaining things that are 10 times more boring and doesn't pay off in any way.
No.
You know?
Yeah, there is no payoff. There's no, like, so some of the new characters are this, like, team of scoundrels led like by
Bugs and fake Morpheus.
And all their little cute little machine friends, which was so just confusing and weird.
Oh, yeah. Because there are machines in Io that are sympathetic to humans or whatever.
Yeah, they're friendly machines.
Yeah.
And I, like, looking back on the movie, it's like, why did Bugs even want to get Neo out? Like, what was the pressing reason why? It's not like they were, you know, having to band up for an imminent machine war, like was the case in the original trilogy. Yeah. Like, they get Neo out of the Matrix, and then the whole movie is just them just trying to get Trinity out of the Matrix, too. Like, that's the whole crux of the movie.
To what end? Like, what were they even trying? Yeah. Like, that's the thing. Throughout this movie, I didn't even know what anybody was trying to do. Like, what the fuck is the... Like, it's clear in the original trilogy, hey, these machines are going to destroy Zion. We need to find the one and free humanity.
Yeah.
Here, what the fuck was the point of anything?
It's... And like, Priyanka Chopra plays the little girl from the... And, you know, that movie was in 2003. That's 17 years ago, mm-hmm. right? That means that the little girl, Priyanka Chopra was like in her 40s. So the little girl would have had to been 20 in the original movie.
Oh, like, what was the weird thing? Because like,
But then they said like, oh, well, the real time has passed to 6 years, but she certainly doesn't look like she's in her 60s or 70s.
Right. And Keanu Reeves and Carrie Ann Moss, they only age like 20 years because they were, pods. They're in special pods. I see.
Yeah. The cool things I liked when you would see, like, before it was revealed that when you would see the reflections and surfaces, mm-hmm. like Neo and Trinity, they would look like other people.
Yeah.
That was very intriguing to me.
Fun little mysteries and stuff. That's why I like that first half hour. I was just like, wait. It reminds me of, like, Lost, where it's just like, oh, you're constantly setting up all these, like, little mysteries that I can't wait to. Why is this happening? Why is this happening? But, like, Lost, when they explain what's happening, it's like, oh, fuck, you ruined it.
Yeah. Yeah. And, like, so... Keanu or Neo goes to this coffee shop every day, and every single day she sees Trinity in there.
Tiffany,
with her
kids. Yeah.
Sorry, it's Tiffany now. Yeah. And like, he just sees her every day and doesn't want to like say anything to her. Like after all this time.
Well, because he doesn't like. Does he see her as Trinity?
I think we're seeing it through his perspective because we see his face and we see her face.
But doesn't he?
I mean, he looks like it. I guess it's unclear whether.
I thought that
Isn't
he didn't.
Isn't he shocked when it's revealed what he really looks like? I remember him being kind of like surprised by it. When
he looks at like the old guy version yeah. in the mirror.
No, it's like a, yeah, it's like a kind of nerdy looking, like balding.
Yeah, it's like, but he looks like kind of just like scraggly and older, you know, like, mm-hmm. and then I don't remember if they show, I think they do briefly show what Trinity looks like, but my understanding was that he thought all that stuff. Like, he had a mental breakdown at one point, and that, like, was his memories of what happened in the first three movies that weren't real. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know if he connected her being Trinity. She talked about how, like, oh, I look like the girl in the game, you know, and I like motorcycles, too. And, by the way, her husband, Chad, is a guy actually named Chad, and he's the director of all the John Wick movies.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
It's funny how this movie is, like... over explains what it doesn't have to over explain and under explains what it does have to explain more.
Yeah.
Like her being like, I look just like the girl in those games. Like I love motorcycles too. And Neo being like, yeah, there's a lot of me in the main character. Like, it's just, it's really strange.
Yeah.
It's such a weird choice.
It's maybe I'm getting nitpicky here too, but they say that those first movies are games, but then they're just show. Was it an FMV game? Because like constantly on the walls, like fake Morpheus is showing him like clips from the movie. Mm-hmm. So it's like, wait, was this like just FMV? Because that's just footage of Keanu Reeves and Lawrence Fishburne up there, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, and there's the new Morpheus who's, unlike the original Morpheus, he's not a real person. He's just a program.
And he's kind of like, there were some kind of funny things of like, since Morpheus is just like the coolest, smoothest guy, and like this guy's like kind of trying to be Morpheus or whatever, but like clearly not as like yeah. he's not Lawrence Fishburne, you know? Mm. I thought there was some kind of fun stuff there, but it was kind of hampered by the fact that I was like, what the fuck are you? What is this?
And
why are you
happening?
He doesn't
do anything. Like, he doesn't even do anything.
You came out of a modal and you're a computer man that like the modal stuff, I didn't quite understand what was going on.
But he was supposedly. The new Morpheus is supposedly an agent as well, and yet we never see him or like the new Smith get into any kind of like agent, awesome agent fights with crazy agent abilities.
Yeah, know? Like Keanu Reeves or Neo programmed him in the modal to be like part Morpheus and part Smith, and so we briefly see him be like an Agent Smith at the beginning of the movie, but then they don't really go anywhere with that at all, and then he's just kind of like wisecracky like Morpheus cosplayer mm-hmm. for the rest of the movie. And then he just turns into a full-on, like, computer man thing mm-hmm. that's also real. Oh, man. Hugo Weaving wanted to be in this, and I guess he talked to Lana Wachowski about it, and it was just like a scheduling conflict thing or whatever, but like almost, I almost would have been sad to see him in this. If this, yeah. It was this script or whatever, it's like we love, even in the weaker Matrix movies, 2 and 3, he is a bright spot in it, and like I just wouldn't want to see him get lowered to this.
Yeah, and it wouldn't have made sense to, like, because he was a program.
Yeah.
And to have him age wouldn't have made sense. You know what I mean?
Right.
I mean, I'm sure they would have justified it or explained it.
They would have given one sentence and we would have been like, oh, I guess that's why.
All right, that explains it. I'll take it.
I mean, they did that with Arnold in those bad Terminator ones where it's like, oh, his exterior skin got roughed up. It's like, okay,
sure. Yeah, instead of a few bruises, he is wrinkly now.
Yeah, that's what happens to robots. Yeah, I just, this all just felt like a really bad fan film. You know, it's just like down to the Morpheus cosplayer and just the just super convoluted like plot that I was about to say that like, oh, it would only satisfy like super hardcore diehard Matrix mythology people or whatever. But like, I wonder if it even satisfies. Actually, I was talking to someone that I know that is like a hardcore Matrix fan, like dove into all the, you know, extended universe stuff or whatever. And he felt the exact same way we did, where he's like, it was fucking terrible, like absolutely awful. So,
yeah, it was just why was this movie made? Like, aside from the obvious money stuff, which they even address explicitly in the movie, which is interesting, it doesn't do anything, and it only serves to just reflect how much Trinity and Neo loved each other. But again, they had the most wooden romance of all time.
Yeah, and it was bad in the movies that were good, or at least the best one is the one where there's the least amount of Neo and Trinity stuff. In fact, you were shocked at the end that, like, wait, they love each other? They're kissing? Like, I wasn't feeling any chemistry throughout this movie.
Both of those characters, especially in the original trilogy, because Tiffany, or, you know, formerly known as Trinity, is, like, more of a regular person in this movie. But, like, they're just totally, like, monosyllabic, you know what I mean? Just, like, very, no real conversation, just, like, come with me, follow the white rabbit, whatever, you know, just very straightforward. Like, there was no personality there. There was no passion or desire or anything. Like, I don't know. It's just, and I'm a sucker for a good on-screen romance. You know what I mean? I think that it's really obvious when something is, you know, written really well, or if something's just tacked on out of necessity. And I always just felt like that romance was totally tacked on out of necessity. And just to be like, you know, in this case, just like the entire narrative is just contingent on it, but it's all just an excuse to make this movie that really doesn't contribute to the larger narrative or make an impression on me at all, other than disappointment.
With the barest attempt, despite how much they talk about everything in this movie, the barest attempt to explain why that if they get close to each other or hold hands or kiss or whatever, that like it's going to destroy all the bad guys.
I think it's
or whatever.
Their like it's all the blood flowing to their loins.
Oh right, yeah. From they thought about their church Zion orgy party. Yeah, they're still thinking about that.
They're still thinking about that.
There were some, I'm trying to think of anything nice to say here, because like I hate just shitting on stuff, but like this did suck.
Well, you know, I think Niobe's whole thing about like, you know, if people want to leave the Matrix now, they can leave. And the priority is just to try to create a new human civilization outside of the Matrix and all the, you know, technological advances that they've made in terms of like agriculture and stuff like that. And her wanting to preserve that rather than bring Neo back and put everything at risk. I think that's totally reasonable.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, like, at the end of the day, like, the Matrix looks like the Matrix. Io, which is the new Zion, looks like a cesspool. And, you know, if she wants to defend that and keep that, fine. But, like, you can't force other people to leave the Matrix to try to embrace a life on Io, which seems really hard.
Well, that was the, like, I guess happy ending to Revolutions, was that the architect being like, oh, yeah, so if people want to leave, they can leave. And it's like, well, then didn't we solve the problem? Like, people can either choose, like, Cypher to stay in the Matrix and live this comfy life, or they could leave and experience, you know, the red pill or whatever. Like, that was the end. And everybody's like, cool, yeah, we get choice now. It's all about choice, right?
Yeah, the only like happy ending would be if the whole Matrix was, you know, removed entirely and like humans were able to create a new civilization on Earth. But that is completely removed from like what is actually possible.
Yeah, I mean, the Earth is fucked in this lore.
Yeah, the Earth
know?
Is totally fucked. Yeah, the sky is burned.
Yeah.
But I mean, I just, you know, looking back on all of the movies too, like I really think that first movie was incredible and everything else was just unnecessary.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
And I can find things I liked about 2 and 3, but they're usually just individual action scenes, mm-hmm. you know, or just a general ambition. You know, I like ambition even if I don't like the product sometimes, you know. But I guess this was ambitious.
Was it?
Was it? Yeah, I don't know.
It was just kind of retreading old ground. It was kind of just doing the same stuff. The things that reliably worked previously, and then it just attached this new narrative framework on top of it that really made no sense or didn't resolve in a satisfying way at all.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
And I think it would bum me out so much more if they hadn't spent the first like half hour or so like doing some really cool shit, like really setting it up to be something very, very different. And that is something, originality and fresh are the two buzzwords I went with Matrix.
Similar to the peak of my interest in the movie was that scene where Neo is like in their like game design mm-hmm. meetings, and it's just showing him kind of cycle through the days and how every day is kind of the same, just small variations here and there, and everyone's just repeating themselves, and it's just an endless cycle,
same buzzwords, yeah.
Like how the realization that like, oh yeah, this is a simulation is just becoming cemented in his mind again.
Mm-hmm.
That's really interesting, and that you know is like a new way to approach the initial realization from the first film. But then from there, it's just so convoluted and just so much nonsense.
Well, and that's the thing. I kind of love the idea if Lana Wachowski had been getting bugged by Warner Brothers for so many years, every year to make a new one, that if she was finally like, all right, fuck it, I'm going to do it, but I'm going to spend the entire time shitting on the idea of sequels and money-grabbing studios and stuff like that. And it seems like that's where they're going. You know, it's pretty explicit for a bit, and then it just throws all of that out the window. Mm-hmm. All of it.
They suggest or they mention that there was this like machine civil war going on. Mm-hmm. And that's a really interesting idea. And I wish it would have explored that more. I wish that instead of what we got, it was just like the humans in the Matrix are recruited to do the bidding of the quote unquote good machines to fight against the other opposing faction of machines. And then so the people, even though they're on the good side, are still being brainwashed. Something like that would have been really cool. Instead, we got what we got.
Yeah, I was so much more intrigued before this started because, you know, I didn't see any spoilers at all beforehand. But just the like one sentence, like kind of like headlines or tweets I saw where it's like, here's the thing you didn't expect. Matrix Resurrections is a rom-com. Or it's like, it's the Gremlins 2 of sequels. Like, I was hearing these things. They were like, what is this? This sounds wild and awesome, you know? And it's just none of those things.
Mm-hmm.
It's none. And it winds up, I would say, without a doubt, the worst Matrix movie.
It's really bad.
Like, look, I'm not the biggest lover of 2 or 3 by any means, but, like, I've found more to like about those movies.
At least they were going somewhere.
Yeah.
What's your favorite on-screen romance?
Ha! Solid Snake and Meryl.
Aww.
Yeah. I'm trying to think. How about you?
Well, I just watched Before Sunrise, and that was, that was just a whole hefty...
Who's in that?
Ethan Hawke and, I forget the name of the actress. She's a blonde lady. But it's a trilogy of movies, and I'm excited to watch...
Tell me about that, yeah.
...the other ones, but I just watched the first one so far, and it's just like... Chemistry off the wazoo, man. They're just listening to music, looking at each other, telling a whole story with their fucking eyeballs, not even touching or kissing or anything like that. It's just the sexual tension is off the charts.
That is you watch a lot of like, you know, not necessarily rom-coms, but even like romance movies and stuff like that.
Yeah, I don't really like rom-coms. I love a good romance, a good drama.
I'm trying to think of my legitimate answer to that because I said Solid Snake and Meryl jokingly, but now I'm thinking like, wait a minute, what is my actual like...
I can't even think of any movies that have a good romance and also have like action elements that make
but
it interesting.
Outside. Everything I love is action.
Well, no,
I'm not talking.
I'm not talking for you. I'm just saying from my perspective. Like that would be really interesting.
God, I'm trying to think of what a good example would be. I like from the stuff I watch. You know, like
Sarah Connor and what's his name? John is it John?
Kyle Reese. I mean, that scene did teach me what sex was.
They met and like 5 minutes later they're fucking.
And then have a future baby, or future savior of humanity.
Michael Fassbender and his sister in Shane.
Fuck, Jesus Christ, no.
God, that was such an unusual.
That movie's fucked up.
That is a fucked up film. That, an amazing movie.
Oh, it's one really
of, one
good.
One of my favorites, but holy shit.
Dark as hell.
Yeah.
God, I the thousands of movies I've seen, to think of a good romance.
No, you never seen anything on screen that gets your innards percolating and filled with whimsy and love and desire to see them together?
I mean, dumb guy brain. I mean, I've seen scenes in movies that have gotten things percolating, but not in like
not in the sex way.
Okay, then that's where it really narrows it down.
Yeah, like, I with Penelope Cruz and Tom Cruise in Vanilla Sky.
That's a good one. That's a good one.
I'm a sucker for unrequited love as sure. well. Like, actually, that's probably one of my favorite things in movies is unrequited love.
Yeah,
it's just like, oh man, they can't be together, and it's just always like. That, you know, it's so sad and tragic, but at the same time, it kind of preserves the idea of like, well, it could have turned out like this or this or this, you know, all the possibilities.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, I give it a think. It's no big deal. I was just putting you on the spot because I figured you wouldn't have an answer for it.
I don't at all. Like, I'm literally trying to think of one I was even like I even have feelings about, mm-hmm. and I can't think of a single one.
Maybe at some point this year in Panning the Stream, we'll do a nice series of romance films to try to.
I wouldn't be against it. I mean, that's a genre I literally know nothing at all about,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah.
Huh. A Twister? Bill Paxton and Helen Hunt, I don't know. They were together, weren't they? Or were they divorced? I don't know. I mainly just think about the tornadoes.
Yeah, I think that's probably in the cow. That's probably the most.
Yeah, those are the things I think about with Twister the most. Yeah. I'll keep thinking about it. Yes. But I'll tell you which one didn't do it for me was Neo and Trinity.
Oh.
In any of these four movies.
There you go.
Yes. But yeah, what a just big old dumb fart of a movie.
It was a fart.
Yeah, just a fart movie. That's The Matrix Resurrections. If you want to watch it, I think it is streaming until January 21st on HBO Max. And after that, you can figure it out. I don't know what the plans are. Just Google it. I don't know. That is it. Thank you all so much for listening. A special shout out to our patrons, patreon.com/panningthestream.
Thank you, patrons.
We keep it very simple. We do a $5 tier. It gets wow. you ad-free episodes.
So good.
It gets you early episodes, wow. Saturday instead of Sunday. You get access to our Discord.
Wow.
And you also get For You written for you by Bonk. Are you popping yourself over there?
It just didn't come out like I intended it to come out.
You get a Bonk who? Bonk, do we have someone this week?
We sure do, Daniel.
Who do we have?
This week, we are honoring our friend Aaron.
Aaron?
Aaron, if you're out there, that's Aaron with an E.
Oh.
And not a double A. If this is percolating your ear holes, I hope it fills you with joy. This Bonk who is for you. Where did Aaron go? No one saw her leave the room. She just disappeared.
Hmm. All right. That could be a cool power.
Or it could be far more nefarious.
Yeah, it fell in a spike pit or something like that. So that's for you to know, Aaron. So happy. What's tickling you so?
She disappeared into the spike pit.
Like a trap door opened up and it like she fell in and everyone's like, where'd she go? But like it was quiet. Like spikes don't make a loud noise.
That's true. I like that version.
See, it all makes sense. I hope that's not what happened to you, Aaron, but if it did, condolences, I guess. Happy New Year to all of you who are not in spike pits.
Happy New Year!
Happy New Year! Bonk, we got another year up ahead of watching movies together and talking about them on this here podcast. Tomanda, another year of thanking you for this theme song. And we'll see you all next week.
Bye!
Bye!